I think when you think about Black people who are often left out of Southern conversations and conversations about Southernness, you get to the idea that the South is speculative.
To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people.
Because history has shown us that courage can be contagious, and hope can take on a life of its own.
I will bring you hope, Bertha, and I ask only one thing in return.
We move now, together.
Not at all. Hope is not lost today. It is found.
Hope is what keeps you going.
Even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree. Look them in the eye and say no. You move.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanti Show.
Seeking SFF in the Deep South.
I'm Jen.
I'm Trish.
And today we have with us two very special guests, Troy Wiggins and Eden Royce, to talk about the current state of the field of Black Southern speculative fiction in general, what it is, where we see movement in it, how they fit into it, and hopefully get some good suggestions on where to go from here. So welcome to the show, Troy and Eden.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Of course. So first off, I would love for you guys to share with our listeners who you are and how you fit into this conversation. So Eden, why don't you go first?
I thought you might call on me first. My name is Eden Royce. I am a speculative fiction writer from Charleston, South Carolina, originally. I currently live in the United Kingdom, but being Southern never leaves you. My short stories can be found online at Podcastle, Fireside Fiction, Abyss and Apex, and a few other places. And my first novel has just been completed, so hopefully that will be somewhere soon. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed indeed. That's awesome. All right, Troy, what about you?
All right. My name is Troy Wiggins. I am a speculative fiction author from Memphis, Tennessee. My work can be found in various venues, including Fireside Fiction, Uncanny Magazine, and Expanded Horizons Magazine, among other places. I'm also at work on a novel that takes place in the South. And as Eden said, the South never leaves you. I'm of the South. I'm a son of the South. And I'm really excited to be having this conversation with you all today.
Awesome. Thank you both so much for coming on the show, by the way. I really appreciate this. Part of the reason that this conversation came up is my own roots, problematic as they are because I am a white woman, are Mississippi, which is where my mother's entire family is from, and most of them still live. And I've always been sort of intrigued as, you know, a child of California by the stories of the South. And unfortunately, growing up, as a Californian, I did not get a lot. It seems to be sort of an empty space in general, larger sort of literary world, and then very specifically within speculative fiction. I for sure was not introduced to literally any speculative fiction that came out of the Deep South when I was a child, and it's something that I'm still searching for. In the meantime, Cecily Kane, who could not be with us today, unfortunately, was in a conversation because she does the Fireside Fiction's Black Speculative Fiction Report. And one of the things that she noticed when she was doing her 2015-2016 report was the lack of authors specifically from the Deep South. And we wondered, why? Why does there seem to be a lack of representation? And clearly there is representation. Both of you are Black authors from the South, writing about the South. The culture is clearly something that's very strong and leaves quite an imprint on anything literary. So the question, though, becomes, what is Southern literature in general? And how does speculative fiction play into that? How do we define Black Southern speculative fiction? I mean, for this conversation, we've clearly kind of defined it as place of birth, right? Both of you were born in the South. But what about things like Octavia Butler writing things like Kindred about the South? So what do we mean here when we're talking about Black Southern speculative fiction? What defines it? And do we need to make distinctions of where people are from or what they're writing about? And how does that sort of play into the field in general?
I like to start by discussing what Black Southern speculative fiction looks like, and specifically the idea. And I think I heard you say before in the introduction that the South is kind of an empty space, or a space that I think is hidden from our conceptions of what America is and looks like. There are some very specific ideas of what the South is. When you think about, for example, that podcast S-Town, for example, there's some very specific generalized ideas of what the South is. And a lot of those ideas are or exist in this like liminal space where nothing's clearly defined. Everything's kind of dreamy. And there's a hearkening of past or some kind of past or long gone grandeur. You know what I mean? So there's a temporality there. But I think when you think about Black people who are often left out of Southern conversations and conversations about Southernness, you get to the idea that the South is speculative, especially taking into consideration the Black presence in the South from the time we were brought to the American shores up until the time our ancestors, well, my ancestors and Eden's ancestors, began to migrate to other parts of the country. And so when you think about the Black placement in the South for a lot of our people, the bulk of our time here, and then you kind of look at the beginnings of speculative fiction in the country and how those, especially from Black authors, and how those stories centered in the Southernness that was inherent to the Black experience, you start to get an idea of, you know, Black Southern speculative fiction. And I'm thinking about like Charles Chestnut, right? So Charles Chestnut's work, The Gopher Grapevine, is a story about, well, our stories, it's part of a collection of stories about the South, of the South. He talks about conjure women, and he talks about the specific kinds of magic that we have here in the South. And so, like, taking those roots into account, you start to get an idea of the Black Southern speculative experience. And these are things that they appear in stories, right? But they're also part of our cultural presentation. When you look at, for example, a city like New Orleans, which traffics very heavily in the mystical and in ghosts and spirits and connecting those things to people's everyday lived lives, you know? So to take the long way around answering that question, the Black Southern is speculative. And I think that as people begin to examine the presence of Black writers in the speculative space from the South, that's a good starting point, is that the Black South is speculative. And it always has been, really. And so to take that view starts you, I think, a little less from a place of bewilderment, but from a place of like, oh, you know, so if everyone is starting from the same spot, then I don't have as far to go.
I like Troy's phraseology of the South is speculative, and it always has been. There's always been this mystique that has surrounded the South. So much of Southern literature that people are familiar with is not from the Black point of view, may not even include the Black experience. It's been so much from the outside in. When you look at some of the larger known writers from the South writing about the Southern experience, Blacks are not always factored in or even seen as primary characters. If they're featured at all, they're secondary, tertiary characters who are seen through a white lens. And a lot of our beliefs and practices as Black people, things we've grown up around, spirits and haints and things that you do to prevent them from affecting your life, are normal everyday things for Black Southerners. And I think that our writing from our point of view, so that those experiences and those beliefs and those ideologies aren't seen as other. They're seen as part of who we are and part of our characterization. And it's a part of growing up as Black in the South. And I think that's the main difference with writers who are Southern writing about the Southern experience versus people who have maybe heard some stories or are fascinated with the South in general, writing from their experience.
So I wonder how this ties in, because Eden, you and I spoke briefly about this, the whole idea that those stories were things that are sort of culturally intrinsic to the Black experience in the South, in terms of conjure culture, root work, and things like that, and sort of the idea that almost the classification of magical realism can fit where things might get placed.
Yes.
Obviously, magical realism has roots in Spanish culture specifically, but it seemed to apply when you and I were talking about where the Southern Gothic fits in and in your own work. So I'm kind of wondering, just in terms of how do we expand definitions beyond speculative fiction, in a sense? How do we expand that to sort of the mainstream designations of science fiction or versus fantasy? Is there a reason that we keep placing Black Southern speculative fiction into sort of the literary fiction side, which is what Cecily sort of discovered as she was doing her Black Spec Fic report, was that a lot of these authors were pushed over to literary fiction versus mainstream SFF. So do our labels, do they just fail when we're talking about Southern literature? And if so, what's the ideal? How do we tackle that issue? And I'm kind of thinking about this specifically as how we define Southern Gothic versus something like horror, for instance. So since this is kind of your area of expertise, Eden, I'll start with you.
As far as including the Black Spec Fic writer in more normative speculative fiction categories, I think that it's very important to embrace that Southern culture is so much of a storytelling culture. It has huge roots in Western African storytelling as well. And I think when we look at stories from the Black Southern perspective, that tradition is really deeply interwoven into it. And there are times where plots and certain twists in the story are not necessarily always explained within the story. And I know that part of my experience with submitting stories and submitting work, a lot of my commentary from editors who have rejected stories of mine with the, you were so close, but the only thing I didn't get was how the magic worked. And I've had that as a rejection reason from several Western publishers, because there's this need to know and this need to understand everything. And I think that's one of the ways in which sci-fi fantasy might fail Black speculative fiction writers, because so much of what we write about has been ingrained in us from extremely young. And it isn't always, this is the reason you do this. It is, here's a story to explain to you why you shouldn't go out after midnight, or this is a reason why you need to stay away from the marshes after dark, whatever have you. And I think that's a part of our storytelling culture, and it's a part of how we entertain each other, entertain our families, and that's what we put into our work. And I think that the need to explain and the need to understand every thing that happens within a story doesn't serve Southern Gothic well. It doesn't serve Black Spec Fic well. And I think we as Black Spec Fic writers, we need to be able to get beyond only being seen as literary, meaning our story is, we're supposed to write things that are steeped in slavery and how we've tried to get past it and how we've worked to improve our lives. But I think that as a Black Spec Fic writer, we need to be given, you know, we're taking the permission, but we need to let other people who are in power of accepting stories understand that our vision of worlds and our vision of world building may be a little bit different than what's typically popular, but it's still very much a vital world and a vital way of presenting the Southern Black experience.
How about you, Troy?
Yeah, so I really love what Eden mentioned about the differences in the ways that Black Southern writers approach storytelling and world building. I think that's if I had to pinpoint a thing or a reason for why the work of Southern Black writers ends up outside of the speculative space, it's because of that, how different and how foreign the ways that we present ourselves and our stories are. And if Southernness is seen as a strange entity by gatekeepers, then Southern Blackness is definitely an even stranger entity. And I think this is why so many of our labels don't work, because, I mean, when you think about the function of those kinds of labels, they weren't ever meant to be applied to Black people. And so that probably accounts for so much of why our work and ourselves are left out of these larger conversations and these larger cultural movements. And I'm thinking specifically about a text. I'm thinking about K.S.A. Lehman's Long Division, which is definitely a speculative work. It's a time travel text. And I went to a local bookstore recently and it was shelved in the African-American fiction section and not in the science fiction section. And I would assume that the reason, if you've never read that book, it's the essence of the story is two kids find a portal in the forest and they travel back to the 1960s. That's a science fiction novel, right? But it's not considered one by the people who are in charge of collecting these types of works. It's not considered one by the people who edit these kinds of works. It's not considered one by the people who decide what types of work go into specific categories. It's not considered a work of science fiction by the people who put books on shelves. And I think a large part of that is because, as Eden said, the Black Southern story and the Black story in America specifically is one that has to be tied to some of those cultural signifiers. It has to be tied to slavery. It has to be tied to struggle for mass consumption. And that's one of the ways that our stories are segregated, especially the Black Southern story, because we still being in the space that our ancestors were in and still in the physical space and still being on these lands, you know, I think there's an idea that these are the kind of stories we have to tell, these stories that are steeped in this residue of slavery. And I think that the gatekeepers and the tastemakers who continue this do us a disservice. I mean, Eden's written stories of all kinds, right? It's written different kinds of stories that cover different kinds of subjects. They have different kinds of thematic elements and different kinds of characters. There's no reason why her story should only be seen as a certain, you know, in a certain light when her stories cover, you know, a breadth of different elements. So I think one thing that might help is, I don't want to say get rid of labels, but we need to seriously question the function of the labels that we place on the work that we consume and create, and how those labels and the people who subscribe to those labels, how those labels force them to interact with the work. Because KSA's book, Long Division, I mean, it's a science fiction novel, but it's also a text that deeply discusses those legacies of slavery, right? But it's not one or the other, it's both. So I think the labels just fail us and the people who subscribe to those labels to really just consider what those mean and how they limit us.
I feel like a lot of times we, as writers, we do want to branch out and we want to do different things. And it's almost like we as Southern writers are a bit more boxed in sometimes, because everyone wants to say, oh, well, write what you know. And obviously, ooh, we know about struggle. And not that those elements can't appear in stories, they certainly can. But sometimes I think we need to be, I think people that edit stories and choose stories and gatekeepers, if you will, need to understand that that isn't all that we do. And sometimes we do want to write about, I don't know, high fantasy, or we want to write about romance. We want to write something that that isn't necessarily based specifically in that struggle or mired in it. But if we want to, then certainly that's something we can embrace. But to understand that we're able to create worlds as well. And that Southernness, that Southern Gothicness, that tendency toward embracing the strange and the unusual, whether it's in practice or whether it's in people, is what we've grown up with and what we do well.
So the thing that all of this kind of just brought up for me is, so I just read Rivers Solomon's An Unkindness of Ghosts, which is very much rooted in plantation culture. But Rivers themselves is from the West Coast, writing about sort of that historical placement of the plantation and slavery. But that book, An Unkindness of Ghosts, is being marketed and sold as a science fiction novel. Whereas, as you say, K.A.C. Lehman's Long Division, for whatever reason, is not. So how do we challenge the labels? How do we challenge the placement in terms of both as readers or as publishers and editors and everything else, and as writers? How do we force our way past those gatekeepers in order to make sure that people are aware of the existence of Black Southern writers who are writing things like science fiction, for instance, who are writing things that could fit within the mainstream labels, but for whatever reason are not?
So this is an interesting question for me because I am sort of a gatekeeper, right? So I'm an editor also. And I think before I was an editor, I would have answered this question differently. And I'm not like a editor for, you know, one of the big five publishers. I'm not publishing novels or anything, but I do think that there are some tenets that gatekeepers can kind of develop for themselves that will help them to look past the labels. And Unkindness of Ghosts is on my TBR list as well. I'm looking forward to reading it. I have a few books in front of it, but I had to move it up my list once I read the synopsis. I do think that one thing that we can do, and we as in people who are not gatekeepers, not official gatekeepers or formal gatekeepers, I think readers are gatekeepers, and readers can control the way that work is introduced to fandoms or to, you know, communities. And readers also set the tone and control which books are lauded and which books are disparaged, right? So I think as readers, what we can do is be good stewards of work that we consume. And that means, for example, with Rivers' book versus Kiese's book, for example, you know, including them in our discussion of what exemplary Black science fiction, for example. So not excluding Kiese's book from discussions about Black science fiction, or not excluding literary books that have speculative elements like Colson Whitehead's Underground Railroad, not excluding those books from the conversations around Black art in these speculative spaces. So that's the thing that readers can do. And I was a big kerfluffle about Colson Whitehead's book a while back, and that kind of illustrates what I mean, that readers weren't willing to, because Colson Whitehead is a writer steeped in the literary tradition and very active in the literary fiction space, there was some pushback about his book being included in lists and recommendation lists and award categories for speculative fiction titles. And it was really interesting to me because for me, that's the kind of book that tells a story not unlike ones. Of course, it's structured differently, but it tells a story that's not unlike ones my grandmother told me when I was younger about, you know, having ancestors who were on plantations and, you know, talking about some of my great uncles who did trick the boss man really good, ended up getting a little bit more money at the end of the workday and stuff like that. Those are the kinds of stories that I would always hear. And I think readers will really drive a lot of the acceptance of that kind of work, including that kind of work in the larger conversations. And for editors and publishers, it is imperative that they also, I think, become more sensitive to the conversations that readers are having, and become more sensitive to the requests that readers have to include works like that in these categories. And I think that readers and fan spaces have done a lot of work to push the status quo. I mean, you look in the young adult space, right? So that's readers and authors and, you know, publishers who have proven themselves to be allies of justice, right? So those are all groups of people who are able to move the needle and create more inclusivity in their space. And I think that in our space, it will take a similar kind of populist movement, right? So it will take readers and friendly editors and sympathetic publishers to really look past the labels and look past the kind of safety net that we've built for ourselves that lets us say that, well, this book by this Black author doesn't belong here, but this book by this Black author does because it has a spaceship and the other one doesn't, right? But I think that, you know, if we as people who love this work and people who, I mean, this work has been instrumental in a lot of us are defining our identities, you know, if we would push against these structures within whatever means we can and just say, hey, you know, we believe that this group of stories by this group of authors belongs in our space just as much as the other ones that you've accepted. I think we might see some, maybe not, like the labels won't go away, but maybe we'll be a little bit more flexible in how we apply them.
So I'm kind of wondering before you respond, Eden, how much of that is just because sort of culturally and academically, we still just don't take genre fiction seriously?
I think, so what's interesting is there is, and Cecily would have been able to speak to this if she was here. So in the first Black Spec Fic report, N.K. Jemisin in her response essay, talked about how there was a very active Black independent publishing community, right? And there is. I got my start as a science fiction and fantasy writer in a space that was headed up by a Black independent publisher. I think in the same way, the Black people who are fans of this kind of work and create this kind of work have established their own spaces to talk about the work that they like and to discuss and to put each other on, recommend work that they like. And I think that the same can be said for institutions and structures that produce this kind of work. So if you look, especially in the South, I would say, but in other places too, if you look at, for example, academic presses and small presses, these are presses that are putting out work by these authors that are not constrained by labels, right? So I've seen several examples of academic presses, academic journals, literary journals that publish speculative fiction from Black authors or from other authors, authors of other ethnicities, and they don't really fret about the categorization of that work. They just publish it. And I think that's something that's really interesting that happens when you, or it's not an interesting phenomenon, but it's a necessary phenomenon for especially Black creators, is us not self-segregating, but creating spaces that we know will be friendly to us. And I think that happens when you think about Black literary fiction as well, because for a lot of Black people, the distinction between, or a lot of Black people are very into speculative fiction. I grew up with a lot of people who were into science fiction and fantasy. As I've gotten older, a lot of my friends, we've remained friends. I made new friends who are into the same stuff I'm into. So there's a market there. So on our side, on the Black people side, I can say that there is a lot of engagement with that work. So for us, maybe not as distinctively as in the mainstream side, there is less of a separation between the two. But I know that, you know, on the literary side of things, and I'm not even sure, I got to say, I have friends who are on the literary side. I don't know if they're concerned about us at all over here, you know? I think that they are just, and I've been in spaces before. I've been in like writing workshops where, you know, the instructor was like, we don't want any science fiction in our writing workshop. But I don't know that they are disgusted with what we're doing over here or reacting negatively. I just think that the structure that they've created serves them well enough to where we don't have to be included in it. I do think that there's room for, at least from my limited point of view, I do think there's room for cooperation. But I also think that over on our side, we have some work to do also, just as a system. And these systems aren't very different, right? It's the same system, just different kinds of work that it examines and publicizes. But I do think that for us as like fans and readers, we have some work to do with our smaller system. And I think that that will help us as we attempt to, you know, maybe draw some, you know, literary, take some examples from some literary structures, or, you know, include more literary authors on our reading list or things like that.
Eden, how about you?
Well, as far as trying to widen markets and all of that, I think what Troy's saying about at gatekeepers needing to sort of listen to what readers are wanting, and readers are, at the end of it, really driving what publishers are looking to put out, whether they are smaller, more independent publishers, or whether it finally gets up to the big five or whatever. At the end of the day, it really is about what readers want to have on the shelves and have available. And I think one of the things is for readers to be more vocal about what they want to, whether it's on social media or whether it's going into a bookstore and asking, do you have work by this person, or do you have this type of reading material? I think that at the end of the day, that's one of the driving forces. And moving to middle grade and young adult fiction, adding in teachers and librarians and all of that, having those people be very vocal about what they want to see is extraordinarily important. And finding those spaces that Troy was saying that Black authors sometimes need in order to get the confidence to submit their work to places that may not seem as necessarily open to our work and to our brand of work. I'm similar to Troy in that I started writing and publishing with smaller presses that gave me a feeling of confidence to submit my work to them, in that they wanted to read what I wrote. And it wasn't, can you rewrite this section so that we understand it? Can you write an explanatory paragraph about what this means, instead of letting our work stand? So I think widening that arena and having an understanding that our books don't necessarily only need to go into the of African American interest sections. I've seen that. I've seen it recently. I've seen it 10, 15 years ago, of books that should have been shelved with science fiction or should have been shelved with horror or whatever have you, that are by Black authors but are only shelved in the African American interest section. And if we want to have that section, I think that's fine to have, but also to take a little bit more time and try to understand what the genre is or what the subgenre of story is. And I think having those books placed in and amongst other books of the same genre will help widen that readership. And I think that's an important thing to have.
Absolutely agreed. One of the things that I found recently, because I was trying to find a young adult novel written about the time that I was a child that was by a Black author that was science fiction or fantasy. So I Googled this, right? Because I realized that it was one of those, as I said earlier, you know, that blank space of my own sort of education in terms of what is science fiction and fantasy growing up. And I found Virginia Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
who I had never heard of before. And I'm like, what is wrong with my, clearly my education system failed me, because there's this amazing series, science fiction series, that was never handed to me as a child. And I was very clearly a child who loved science fiction and fantasy growing up. Everybody knew it. My librarian knew it. My teachers knew it. My parents knew it. And I had never been handed a book by Virginia Hamilton, despite the fact that she was a Newbery Award winning author, right? So I'm now reading Justice and Her Brothers, which I'm very excited about. And I wonder why was I never given those books? And clearly it seems like that sort of issue is continuing, because I have a feeling if my teachers or my librarian were trying to just give me a work about the African-American experience or by an African-American author, I may have been handed Virginia Hamilton, but because I was looking for science fiction and fantasy, I wasn't. And that seemed like a gross oversight on the part of my elementary school experience. And I just wanted to mention that because I'm still reeling over the fact that I had missed this entire author and her work. It's shocking to me.
Well, this is actually more about the readership topic since I'm coming at this whole conversation from that perspective. As a reader, what I've always loved about speculative fiction, whether science fiction or fantasy or horror, is the exploration of new ideas and getting new perspectives on things. And so books written from perspectives that are not the majority white bread American culture, it just seems that should be a natural for speculative fiction. And so it stuns me that there are gatekeepers in the community who, quote, want to keep politics out of their fiction, and by that they want to remove a lot of the stuff that is freshest and most interesting in the field to me. I'm really lucky that my county library is very interested in finding new voices, and so I've been able to read Kaya Shanti Wilson's novellas from the library, and finding a lot of other new people that way. But I just feel incredibly sad for the people who are self-limiting and trying to limit others from reading what is so interesting and what is so vital in conversations about what's going on now and in what life could be.
Yeah, I think this is one of the reasons that I wanted to have this conversation in the first place, right? I mean, mainstream science fiction and fantasy still tends to be largely white, clearly. And obviously, as you mentioned, Troy, you are there. There are Black readers of science fiction and fantasy. There's an entire blurred community on Twitter for a reason, sort of creating a space separate from mainstream science fiction fantasy for Black people to have those conversations, to love the things that they love that are not necessarily the literary side of things. They're just like the straight up nerd culture going strong. And my concern has been, you know, how do we fold those two communities together? And it seems, just in this brief conversation that we've had, that a lot of that has to do with sort of the gatekeeping that happens at the lowest levels, in those elementary school libraries, in our public libraries. But as you mentioned, Eden, just in our bookstores, that the gatekeeping seems to happen at every level of the conversation, from the editor saying, can you put a little bit more Black into this, which is something that I've heard from authors before, to the person shelving the books and only putting it into the African American section, for instance. And I'm not sure what the solution is. So clearly you guys have given us some ideas, and hopefully our listeners after this go out and try to find those things that for whatever reason are being designated one way, but fit perfectly into their own interests. So I'm wondering, if we're actually at a good point for this, who are some of the authors that you love right now writing even adjacent works that the mainstream SFF community should probably be paying attention to? And who are the ones that are writing like firmly in and firmly marketed as speculative fiction that we should be paying attention to? Do you guys have some favorites that we could share with our listeners?
Oh boy, that's going to be hard to sort of narrow down because there's so many things that I really love. I just finished reading Tay Thompson's The Murders of Molly Southbourne, and it's a novella, and it is absolutely phenomenal. It's one of those things that you read and you just think, how in the world did he think this up? How did he pull this off? Which he does pull it off amazingly well. That is a book that I completely recommend. As you mentioned, anything by Virginia Hamilton. I grew up with her work. My mother was obsessed with me reading Newbery and Caldecott Award-winning novels. So I've read her work for ages and read it when I was growing up. I would also say Helen Oyoyemi, her White is for Witching book is fantastic. It isn't for everyone, but it's definitely a horror novel that is what I would consider the ultimate in Gothic. It's actually set not that far from where I live now, because it's set in Dover in the United Kingdom, and it changes POV, and one of the POVs is the house. And let's just say the house does not care for everyone. And it's just beautifully rendered and so confidently written. It's one of those books that if you say, oh, I really don't like horror, I really don't like dark fiction, that is one of the books that I would definitely suggest that you pick up, because it is beautiful dark fiction. And yes, I put those two words together, beautiful and dark, because it is exactly that.
How about you, Troy? And I'm curious for both of you, so after Troy responds, Eden, maybe you can say something to this. Like, where are the places that readers should be looking? How do we find Black Southern writers without specifically every single day, you know, having to go to a Black Southern writer and saying, please tell me something? Or is that the solution, you know, is just making sure that we are asking constantly for these writers? So, Troy?
Yeah, so a couple of recommendations, and I think these might not be necessarily the most speculative recommendations, but I come from, a lot of my training was done in the African-American literary tradition. And like I said, there's a lot of speculative at play in a lot of our classical texts, but they're not specifically science fiction, fantasy, or horror. So with that, I think I recommend this book to everybody on every podcast I ever go on. Ishmael Reed's Mumbo Jumbo is a great book. Ishmael Reed is a satirist. He is irreverent. He really plays around with language, with identity. And if you are not Black, or hell, if you're not Black of a certain age, you might not get every reference that he's making. But it's a great book just to dive into a story that's not centered on what we typically expect from stories from Black people. And I love it. I read it right after college, and it was one of the books that inspired me to start writing again. I think that's my biggest recommendation to people. But honestly, there are so many other books that people can jump into, especially if they want to get into more Southern work. Cherie Renee Thomas is, you know, she's really famous for Dark Matter, the anthology of African-American speculative fiction. But some of her short fiction, a lot of her short fiction is extremely Southern. She's also from Memphis, Tennessee. And a lot of her short fiction is amazing, very Southern, very evocative of place. She had a story recently in Apex, though I don't remember the title. It was a longer title. And she also had a story in Sycorax's Daughters, which is a anthology collection of horror writing from African-American women. And both of those stories were very, very place-focused, very Southern. And I think that people, just keep your eye on Cherie in general, because she's put out a lot of work during her tenure, and all of it has been really amazing. I'm looking forward to reading An Unkindness of Ghosts. That's a book that I'm really trying to get into. Another book that's not necessarily speculative, but that I think people should read to understand kind of the speculative that lives in the way that Black people live their lives is Gloria Naylor's Mama Day. And I think Niecy Shaw recommended this in her Crash Course. And it's one of those books that if you were wanting to label it magical realism, you kind of could. But it's really just a meditation on everyday living and how there is magic in your everyday, and how you should heed the lessons from your past self, you know, from your family. And so those are really awesome books. I think those are just a basis, right? They're, especially if you're looking at New Southern literature. So I haven't been able to find any Black people really in New Southern literature, or what's it called now? Grit Lit. I've been doing some reading about that. I haven't been able to find where the Black people are yet, though.
Grit Lit is new to me.
Yeah, it's new to me too, and I'm from here. Like, I'm here now. but I just really started digging into it last year. I haven't found any Black people. But an author that I think if you wanted to dig into Southern literature, specifically is Harrison Scott Key, who has a book that's really, really evocative of a place also. And then there are writers who are living in the South, but their stories aren't necessarily Southern. And here is where I'm thinking of, oh gosh, I'm going to forget. But her book starts in Ghana and ends up in Alabama. It's a slave narrative, but it's not one of those really disgusting ones. But I think those are my big recommendations. I tend to read all over the place. And when it comes to actually recommending stuff, I draw blanks all the time. I'm like, oh, you know, read that book. You should read. It's fundamental.
This has all been about written stories, but I was wondering about film and TV. We don't often see the southeastern United States portrayed in science fictional or fantasy multimedia. But I was wondering, when it does do that, do y'all have any recommendations for what does a really good job of portraying the region? And, you know, not just the whites in the region, but also people of color. Feel free also to assail any that you think does a particularly terrible job of doing that.
Yeah, so definitely if you're just looking for a quick visual shot, Beyonce, the visual offering for Beyonce's Lemonade is great. Yeah, and as you probably already know, a lot of that imagery was kind of inspired by Daughters of the Dust, which is a film by Julie Dash, which is really great. And also Beasts of the Southern Wild is a film that comes up a lot when we're thinking about not just like Southernness, but like the Southern speculative and Southern Gothic.
Yeah, that's another one that kind of defies categorization that we were talking about before, where to shelve something.
And what I liked about it, and what I like about so many of the stories that we tell, is that, of course, I think people look for, you know, those examinations of our struggle in very obvious ways. And I think this speaks to what Eden was saying earlier about how, you know, understand how your magic works, or can you make this a little blacker? And in so many of our stories, and especially in Beasts of the Southern Wild, you get examinations of those topics, but they're very personal and quiet. And they're not fit for the kind of consumption that mainstream audiences can sometimes require from stories like that. And so people can think that maybe it hasn't done the work that it has done. You know, it's not 12 Years a Slave, or it's not, you know, Birth of a Nation, or any of those kinds of filmic texts that wear their messaging on their sleeve. It's very quiet, but it discusses environmental racism. It discusses the failing of the social safety net, right? So it talks about those things, but in ways that aren't bombastic. And I like that about that.
I agree with Daughters of the Dust that Troy mentioned, which is very much my heritage, which is Gullah Geechee. And it's filmed in the part of the world that I grew up in. So I do have a special affinity for that particular movie. I would also mention Eve's Bayou.
Mm. Come on, Eden.
It's very atmospheric. There's touches of landscape that you see. There's also a bit of conjure as well. There's also a portrayal of a black family. There aren't any that I noticed, as many times as I've seen it, any white people in the movie, but it's very much a snapshot of well-to-do blacks in the South and coming up against conjure magics and jealousy. And it's still at its core, I think it's a coming of age movie, but it's definitely the movie that I would consider telling people when they say, what's a movie that I can watch to get a sense of Southern Gothic? It's definitely that movie. It's, for me, a favorite. And incidentally, I found my copy in the African American interest section when I purchased it. There are several movies that you can look at just for a feel of the atmosphere, but I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better portrayal of the Black Southern experience that is different from coming up from slavery, aside from those two movies. And I just wanted to mention, I think I looked it up because I know the exact book that you were talking about, Troy, coming from Ghana to Alabama. Is it Homegoing? Is that the one you were mentioning before?
That's it, Eden. Thank you. I could not recall that name.
That is on my to-read list, and I knew exactly which one you were talking about when you mentioned it. And going back to some other Black Southern writers, there are people that I know now that are just sort of at the point of getting confidence to write. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing that could help is, honestly, if you read something of theirs that's, whether it's published by a publication house, or if you see it on their blog or whatever have you, either reply to them and say how much you liked it, or share it on your social media and give it kudos, because it's astounding at how much that can help a writer that's struggling to send their work out in the world and struggling to feel like their voice is actually being heard.
Absolutely. We really do need to do a better job of that as readers, I think. I do, at least. So, since we're hitting sort of our hour mark, I just have a couple of more questions. The first is, because we've kind of touched on this, you know, in areas that do get represented in terms of what we actually get to read about and what people are writing about, but what are some aspects of Southern culture, history, or folklore that need more speculative exploration? And I'm curious, we know a little bit about Eden, but what do you guys tend to focus on in your own work? And what would you like to see more of in the future?
So I think an idea that isn't always explored in fiction, or I think in most presentations of the South, is the idea that there are multiple Souths. So Eden is from South Carolina, and I am from Memphis, Tennessee, and those are two distinctively different places, right? So the kinds of stories that Eden will tell as a woman of Gullah Geechee heritage from South Carolina are different than the types of stories that I would tell as a man who is of Mississippi sharecropper stock. And so that's kind of a broader sort of thing. But I would like to see, and this of course requires that we give the people who are living in those areas, or people who can claim heritage from those areas, kind of a platform to publicize their story. But I would like to see that. but just, you know, that the South isn't homogenous. It's not a uniform region, that there are different stories across the region and different writers who are telling these different kinds of stories. So that's something that I would like to see explored a lot more. And in that exploration, I think we will see a greater sort of representation of what the South is. I was on a message board and someone screenshotted a Facebook message that really encapsulated, and I don't think I can find it now, it was a long time ago, but that really encapsulated how different each part of the South is. And I'm sure if we'd had some of the authors who were supposed to join us, they were from other regions of the South, they could tell you about some of the specificity of their region that might not be at play with in my region, you know, the Mississippi Delta or in Eden's region, you know. So I think giving some a platform to writers and people who want to explore those different kinds of Souths would be really, really awesome. I would like to read more fiction that discussed that or that looked at that kind of stuff.
I would love the different Souths as well. And because Troy and I are from the South, we are very familiar with the fact that there are enormous differences depending on not only what state you're in, but what city, what area of the city. And I would love to see that explored. There is another African-American Southern writer, Rashida Prelo. She has, I think, a trilogy out called American Spectre. And she's written a novel that's one of the only other writers that I know of Gullah Geechee heritage as well, that she's novelized, called The Everlasting. And she has, from my understanding, been able to do a screenplay that's getting a Hollywood table read sometime next month, I believe. So I wish her great luck with that. But what I would love to see is more the Southern language in writing and the cadence of the way Southerners speak in different parts of the of the South. So many times, certain phraseologies, certain dialects, all of that, and even with a character being from the South, in the minds of some writers, that's always a Southern accent can be seen as this person is unintelligent or this person is uneducated. And I would embracing dialect and embracing ways of speaking, but not having that as shorthand for a character that's of lower intelligence or lower educational background. And I'd like to see us move away from that.
Yeah, that would be nice. as a very first simple step.
We've talked about what readers who are really invested in finding Black Southern spec fic can do to find more, but I wonder, where do you see hope in terms of bringing that more into the mainstream so that lazy readers can find it and be exposed to it and hopefully enjoy it?
I know that different readers get their work from different places. I do spend not a lot of time, but a fair amount of time on social media, seeing what books are coming out and following publishers on social media to see when certain works come out. And there are also certain people on social media that I trust their opinion, if you will, on books. And I think that's a good place to start. Or just follow a couple of writers whose work you've liked. And I don't think there's anything wrong with sort of asking for recommendations online, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or whatever you use, saying, I'm looking for a book of this type. Does anyone have any recommendations? And I get a lot of great books and great suggestions from that. But as far as making it more mainstream, I think the only way to really do that is as a reader, as a consumer of literature, as a consumer of speculative fiction, to make your voice heard with what you're looking to read and what you're wanting to read. Is there anything like this? Is there anything that you can recommend to me or that you're publishing or that's coming out that has these themes or are by writers that are Black writers, Black Southern writers? And hopefully at some point that will make ears prick up of this is what people want to read and what people want to hear.
To kind of take the long way around, I think that one of the things that we talked about earlier was gatekeepers, right? So we think about gatekeepers as editors and publishers, but another subset of gatekeepers is also people who engage critically with works of literature. So I'm thinking about reviewers and people who put together reading lists for some of the book blogs that we all consume. And a big problem, I think, with that section of gatekeepers, you know, as it is with the other sections of gatekeepers, is inclusivity. And so we don't have as many Black and brown reviewers or as many Southern reviewers as we probably should have. We don't have as many people putting together those book lists who are Black or brown or from the South. We don't include those titles from that specific section of writers on those book lists. So, and to Ina's point about recommendations, I think that that's where I get a lot of my recommendations from, are the book lists from like Barnes & Noble, Sci-Fi, their blog, or from Tor.com's recommendation list, or from recommendation lists from, you know, several other online platforms who've taken it on as a job to produce lists, themed lists of fiction recommendation. And so I think that that's a really key space in which to influence the types of works that are introduced to people. But the way that those spaces and those creations, those lists, are made more efficient in those recommendations is if the people who know about those works are hired to produce those lists and create those lists and be a part of that process, right? That's one of the big things that, well, I don't think we overlook it. I just think that it doesn't come up in the conversation as much structurally, is that in order to amplify a specific group of people that have been marginalized for a long time. Of course, we don't want to give them all of the emotional, intellectual labor of fixing their marginalization. but we do want to look to them as experts. And I don't think that happens a lot, especially in these book lists, right? Which are still, you know, 80% white men. And in some rare flashes of inclusivity, they're half white men, 49% white women, and then there's a black person on the list, you know? And so I think that that vehicle is one of the best kind of structural ones that already exists to not only get people interested in and engaged with black speculative fiction and black Southern speculative fiction, but also fiction that is across the line, the speculative line, maybe into the literary fiction section that, you know, more people on our side don't know about. And I'm thinking about Homegoing. I'm thinking about We Love You, Charlie Freeman by Caitlin Greenidge. I'm thinking about Helen Oyeyemi's work. I'm thinking about all kinds of novels that have come out in the past few years, The Turner House, that have these, that discuss these topics and that have this element of speculation in them, right? And some of those titles I just mentioned don't necessarily have those elements of speculation, but the titles that do exist that have those elements, they could appear on one of these lists. And in an ideal world, the people who read that list would make a big stink because that person doesn't necessarily have their science fiction and fantasy bona fides, right? But the work itself is still, it still traffics in the things that we enjoy to read on our side, on our, you know, part of the literary landscape.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for coming on and teaching me as much as you guys just have, because I feel like I can come away from this and what you have told us with an entire new group of people to go read. My to-be-read pile just grew by 10 times.
Yay! That's always exciting when you find new people that you want to explore their work.
Exactly. So hopefully our listeners will go seek these people out too, and I'll try to put everybody that you've mentioned into our show notes. But before we end this, I want to make sure you guys have a chance to share where people can find you. So Troy, why don't you go first? Where can we find you and all of your work?
Yep. So I am Troy L. Wiggins. That's my byline. I am on Twitter at Troy L. Wiggins. I blog at afrofantasy.net. And I am one of the editors of FIRE, Magazine of Black Speculative Fiction. And FIRE is on Twitter at FIRE Lit Mag, and FIRE is spelled F-I-Y-A-H. And we are online at firelitmag.com. And I actually, so I have discovered a couple of recommendations, so I'm going to make your TBR list a little longer. I can't believe I forgot to mention Walter Mosley, who was my number one influence. And his work, especially his early work, is definitely Southern. His main character, E.Z. Rawlins, is from Houston's Fifth Ward, and he migrates to Los Angeles. But the all of the books that E.Z. is in are very Southern and often deal with that kind of feeling of dislocation that Black people who grew up in the South and migrated to other places felt, especially in that period of time. And also another one of my great influences, Zora Neale Hurston. I can't believe I forgot to mention her. She actually has a book coming out in May titled Barracoon, The Story of the Last Slave. And I think that's going to be great. In fact, to go back briefly to Eden's point about dialect, my very first published, professionally published story, A Score of Roses, leaned heavily and was influenced heavily by Zora Neale Hurston's short story, The Gilded Six Bits, which used very heavy dialect. And my story was criticized for my use of Southern dialect. But I mean, Zora Neale Hurston's great. So... I think that's a really great recommendation. I'm excited for her book.
Awesome. Thank you so much. How about you, Eden?
I'm also looking forward to Zora Neale Hurston's book. It's one of the reasons that I still embrace dialect is reading some of her work. Sweat was one of my favorite short stories by her.
I love Sweat.
Oh my gosh, it's great. I would also like to add to the TBR, if you don't mind. I would suggest Voodoo Season by Jewel Parker Rhodes.
Yes.
Oh, I met her. I'm going to have to tell you that story one day, Troy. She is absolutely wonderful. But it's an actual trilogy of stories about one of the descendants of Marie Laveau. So that's an absolute phenomenal series to read. So I would definitely add that to the list, as well as she's not from the South, but a lot of her writing is very reminiscent of Southern writers, and my work was compared to hers once, and I was so amazingly overjoyed I couldn't stand myself. And I would say it's anything by J. California Cooper.
Yes.
Whether it's A Piece of Mine or Homemade Love or Some Love, Some Pain, any of her short story collections, any of her work is absolutely amazing. And going on a slight tangent, but it's not 100% speculative, but it's definitely slice of life, and it feels like Southern writing, and it feels like Southern characters, and it feels like Southern situations, and absolutely wonderful author. But finding me online is, I am at Eden Royce on Twitter. My website is edenroyce.com, where you'll find a list of my work and a link to my blog as well. I am a regular contributor to Graveyard Shift Sisters, which is a blog dedicated to purging the Black female horror fan from the margins. So I will write book reviews there. I also interview Black women writers of dark fiction and post the interview and book review on those sites. And there might occasionally even be a movie review of a typically some blaxploitation horror movie, because I'm obsessed with those. So, and that's about it.
Thank you so much. And really quickly, I just want to thank Cecily Kane, who you can find on Twitter, Cecily_Kane, and at her blog, manicpixiedreamworlds.wordpress.com. She helped get this entire discussion together and helped with a lot of the questions. So thank you, Cecily. But thank you so much, Troy and Eden, for coming on today again. I think this was just, for me as a white woman from California particularly, who is really looking to make the South not a blank space in my own reading, I really appreciate you guys coming on today and sharing all this with our listeners. So thank you both.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Of course. And thank you, Trish, for coming along for the ride.
I've really enjoyed the conversation, too. As a white woman from North Carolina, you know, I try to read widely, but I love finding even more to read. So thanks for including me on this.
And now that we have to-be-read piles that are 10 miles high, which is the best problem to have, thank you for joining us today on this discussion on the Skiffy and Fanty Show, and we will see you guys around. So, awkward ending, and scene.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to support us, you can find us at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so at our email at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, and on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro and outro music comes from Dimension by Creo. You can find out more about them at freemusicarchive.org.